My prayer every day and every night was, "Dear Lord, do something so big it could only be you." I'd heard of people who prayed these limiting prayers, and I had noticed if I said, "Lord, get me through this situation," I got through the situation. So I thought, how about instead of just saying, "Lord, get me on stage for 10 minutes, what if I just prayed this completely non-limiting prayer, and let's see what happens?
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn and discover how speaking with people of other faiths can strengthen our own faith and even our own practice. Funerals are pretty serious. I mean, we think they're going to be very serious, but then people share delightful stories about the dearly departed, and we find ourselves laughing. And as a kid, I thought, is this okay? But as an adult, I think those are the moments I feel most connected to the person whose life we're celebrating, because laughter and making the best of hard situations is one of the best things about humans. It's how we get through some of our trials and challenges. So when is it okay to laugh about church stuff? Well, today's guest is walking that fine line between self-parody and embracing her Southern Christian culture. Ellen Scrimeti is the comic talent behind "Hey Jesus, It's Me," Instagram sketches about a middle-aged Southern woman's opinions on mamas, menopause, and menus. Based in Birmingham, Alabama, Ellen has trained with Second City and tours as a stand-up comedian. She's recently published her story in a new book called "Hey Jesus, It's Me."
Well, I wish I could just say that I have so much faith that I never wavered, even when the world shut down. There was a moment when I came home from Target, and I believe I was looking for alcohol and glycerin. Do you remember? We were all trying to make our own hand sanitizer. And my husband met me outside, and I was getting out of the car. I was crying. And I said, it's over. It's all over. Because the Thursday before Alabama shut down was my first time to get on stage and do stand-up. After years of thinking I had stage fright, it was never going to happen, I finally got on stage. The owner of that club, which is now a medical office, said, "Oh, Ellen, let's do this every Thursday night." And then the next day, it was over. So there were tears. But what happened is Second City in Chicago, they have a training center. But like most people during COVID, they had to find a way to keep the doors open. So they offered online classes. So while I was a mother doing my children's homeschool or COVID learning, I was also taking Second City courses. And it was one day that my teacher said, "You guys are going to be so glad that you did this. We have people who've become so famous on the internet, and they get booked into clubs and they don't have an act. Well, you guys are going to have an act." And I thought, well, my women and fun men, which is how I describe my audience, they are not just going to go to a comedy club and like, "Oh, let's see if there's a middle-aged woman telling funny stories about church and menopause." But I know that they would come if they knew I was going to be there. So I just did the opposite. Whereas most people get the audience and then they learn an act, I learned an act and then started turning my stand-up sketches into online sketches. So as my audience grew, I was then able to start doing stand-up work and know that I could draw a crowd.
Well, there are people who've kind of made fun of what we might call church ladies in the past. You know Dana Carvey and the church lady. That's 30 years ago. Maybe you were born. Probably you were born.
I was absolutely born and can remember going to school the next day and all of my friends going, "Well, isn't that special?" You know, so yes, we would reenact the church lady sketches in school on Monday morning. Yes.
But you did this other take on it because you're seeing humor really in your own situation and of this certain generation of women. And that's got to have felt empowering, as you must feel people saying, "Oh, yes, been there, done that. You're speaking my life."
Oh, you are absolutely right. It felt so great the first time I did a sketch that was really based upon just the conversations I have heard my mother have day in and day out. My sketches always try to come from a place of love. And I think that's also the difference, whereas I'm not making fun of a church lady. I'm celebrating them. They're beautiful for using their gifts of hospitality to try to make the church feel even more welcoming. But the first take I had on Church Lady Humor was if the queen died in the South. And it was, the premise was, you know, if depending on your age, if you're in your late 80s or 90s, your funeral will be planned, you know, while you're possibly still alive. And everyone in my hometown, they have their freezers ready at any moment. So the first time I did that.
Wait, to preserve the body.
Well, no.
Or for, for the funeral food?
For the funeral food. I came in one time into my, I came home and my mother was in the kitchen and there were four coconut cakes, pound cakes. Her kitchen was full. And I said, Mom, what is going on? And she just looked at me and said, somebody could be dying right now. I don't have anything in my freezer. So in my neck of the woods, we stay ready. Like, you will not creep up on us. Like, you could have a heart attack and we have something to pull out of our freezer. And so the premise of if the queen died in the South was just, okay, well, if she passes on this day, we'll have everything on this day. And we also had to get it done before football. And just to see so many people go, that's my mom. That's my grandmother. I have heard my aunts have the same conversation. It just filled my heart that I'd really tapped into something by simply just repeating the things that I had grew up hearing.
I think society's a lot more open to jokes about women aging and menopause. And I'm just wondering, because you use humor, is that how you get your foot in the door to really open up to different subjects?
Well, there is a saying in comedy that I learned at Second City, which is comedy is the lie that tells the truth. So you can take a subject as a joking matter, but still drive home a point. You just make it a little bit more palatable. And I like to call it hiding the medicine. And the reason why I like to talk about menopause and like to talk about what we're going through is because I watched my mother and everyone my mother's age and older, and even some people younger than my mother, we just called it the change. And it was this thing that was not talked about. And now that I'm going through it and I know how not fun it is, I don't want my daughter to have to just be told, oh, it's the change, it'll be fine. But really, you're not fine because there are all of these changes happening. So for me, if I can use comedy to make this period of life easier, I want to do it. And keep the conversation going, because it's truly amazing from my standpoint how diet changes and vitamins and a little hormone replacement therapy have really made me much easier to live with.
Presumably a better podcast guest. Thank you.
Right. I don't have a hot flash right now. I am, you know, a happy-go-lucky person, but thanks to vitamins and hormone therapy.
Well, you have this subtitle. So on your book, it's Hey Jesus, It's Me. I have questions, comments, and concerns, which is, you know, what the people ask you on a survey, like, how are we doing? As if Jesus had handed you a survey. So I want to ask about the first time you picked up your remote, like a phone, and you left, I guess, a voicemail for Jesus.
Keep in mind, 3 years ago when I started, I was so scared to post and did not know what I was doing. And I hope anyone can learn from me. Don't let the fact that you don't know what you're doing keep you from doing it, because everything is figure outable, which is what we say in my house. But I was doing this character, Kitty Potter, who worked at a TV station and was just giving updates. And I had a coworker named Kevin who never came into work. And so the very first Hey Jesus, I asked the Lord if we were told to pray bold prayers in church. And I said, is praying for my coworker to have a tapeworm, is that bold enough or not bold enough? And that got a really good laugh. And then my second Hey Jesus was, well, okay, if I can't pray for him to have one, what about me? Like, to lose weight, could I do that? And it resonated with people. And I remember hearing in church how the Lord wants our every day, and he wants to talk to us all the time. Like, there's no minimum. Like, you haven't reached your max amount of words that you can give to the Lord each day. And it just occurred to me, well, this could be a great reminder to people through comedy. Talk to Jesus about everything. He wants the little stuff. So that has always been my hope through those sketches, is that it makes you laugh, but it reminds people he wants your questions, comments, and concerns. Talk to him. Ask him.
When did you know that you'd really hit a nerve with people as they reacted? Was it just numbers, or were people writing to you?
the comments under each one, the hearts and the comments, and you could see that other people were sharing it. And so I knew, like, wow, people are really resonating with this. And it just, you know, gave me the drive just to keep writing more and more Hey Jesus sketches. And then too, just to drill down of like, what are some more fun and funny things happening in the church? And one of those, I grew up with my mother being on committee on committees. And I can hear my mother leaving, I gotta go, I've got committee on committees tonight. Well, I would talk about committee on committees, and some people that were Baptists, they knew exactly what I was talking about. Other people would say, how did you come up with that name? It's hysterical. And I said, oh no, it is a Baptist committee where you choose the chairs and co-chairs of each committee. It is an aspirational committee, because you don't have to move anything. You don't have to move chairs or tables. Your committee position is choosing other people to run the committees. I just wanted to just celebrate that and how fun church can be.
We take ourselves so seriously sometimes, we need somebody every once in a while to pop our little balloons. So it seems like a healthy thing. One of my favorite columnists in the Salt Lake Tribune was someone who loved poking fun and pointing out the idiosyncrasies of our local church culture. But I think the reason it worked was because he did it from within the culture, affectionately, as a member of the culture. And yeah, he was including himself in his humor. So when you're doing these, do you feel like it's just you on steroids, or are you channeling someone like your mother?
Oh, I think it's just a heightened version of myself. I love to create characters in my head and impersonations and things like that. And with comedy, you can't be so perfect. You know, you have to do a heightened version of the person, because that heightened version is what makes it funny. But yeah, the other thing too, though, about the South, I have to tell you, Steve, is that anytime I think I have made this so over the top, everyone will know that this is satire. I will have people who'll say, oh, I'll do you one better. I did a whole sketch about a daughter going through Rush at the University of Alabama. And I thought I'd made it so over the top that everyone would get it. And I had either mean comments, I can't believe you would say these things, or you would do these things to your daughter, or people would say, oh, honey, that's nothing. That's nothing. Let me tell you what happened to me.
I'm going to quote you to you from your book. There's one little place in the introduction that I pulled something from, I love. You said you started Hey Jesus, It's Me in hopes it would remind people Jesus wants our laughter along with our tears. He's truly a loving God, wants to be part of every moment. And this line, though I have been asked many times for the number I'm calling, and if I can lend out my remote, I love that I don't need to. We all have a direct line already.
Yes, absolutely.
And so it, to me, it's this mixture of comedy, but it really is with faith.
It is. It truly is. And I said, when I talked to the publishers, I said, you know, my goal is to truly hide the medicine in laughter. But I wanted a book that would make people laugh. And I wanted to write a book that would give insight into what it's like to grow up in the South in the 80s and all the crazy things that come with it. But I also, my utmost prayer was that it would remind people to cling closer to Jesus. And I think it's important that we have reminders that we don't have to be perfect to follow Jesus. We do not. And all we can do is keep trying to be better.
Well, we can be thankful to ladies in the South for giving us all the bless their heart.
All
sort
of
phrases.
Their hearts, which, as everyone I think now knows, can mean anything from you're the greatest person ever to, oh.
Ellen, I hesitate to say, could we be serious for a minute? Because I don't think we have to be, but I would love to delve a little into the house you grew up in and how it was a house of faith.
So it was truly a house of faith. Something that I heard when my oldest daughter was being baptized, someone said, faith is caught and not taught. And in our house, it was definitely caught, because both of my parents were very active in the First Baptist Church. My brother and I, we were there every time the doors were open. And we saw also what that life of faith, how it shaped our parents' lives, how their business was able to grow, how their love was able to grow. And it was amazing. Now, one thing my brother and I have discussed at length is that growing up in a Christian home, we both gave our lives to Christ at a very young age. We married and had our families, but we each had something happen to us in our life, or an awakening in our life. And my brother said, when I called him to tell him about mine, and it was essentially, I had a situation where Jesus was all I had. And then I realized that was all I needed. And he said, you've just made Jesus your own. And I said, what was that? And he said, you've made Jesus your own. He said, you know, Ellen, we had these idyllic lives where we went to church in a small town. So when I had that making Jesus my own moment, I feel like that was when all of my faith was renewed. And then that is what has driven me to where I am now.
A lot of people I know who are just naturally very funny, or at least I think they're funny. As I think about them, they've been through some stuff. Is that required to do? I mean, I think you must be very observant of people to pick up on things. But I wonder if there has to be this certain empathy or sensitivity and really having gone through some stuff to grasp the humanity of it. I mean, that sounds so clinical.
I do think that almost every comedian has gone through something that drives their empathy towards things and kind of shifts their view of how they see things. And there's just a different way that a comedian may see things because they're always looking to find the humor. But also, Steve, I have a theory that I truly believe that people who can go very funny, that we also, if we're not watching our mental health and we're not taking care of ourselves, we can also go as low as we can go high.
Yeah.
I have no doctor research. That is just me. You know, if you think about, you know, the great Robin Williams, who was one of the greatest comedians of our time. And then just to think about the level of sadness that he was carrying with him while he was making us all laugh.
And the church person in me and the Christian is saying, and Jesus descended below all things to lift us all up, which also means he must have a great sense of humor. And the sense of joy that God can feel must be unimaginable.
Yes. And you know, there's a saying, we plan and God laughs. And I do believe that, you know, I do believe that laughter is great medicine and that he sent people to be able to dole out that medicine on earth. And so for me, when you talk about you can go as high and you can go as low, for me, that's the reason why, you know, exercise, but also staying close to the Lord is truly how I keep from going low, just because, I mean, this is a business where you get told no a lot more than you get told yes. Most of my negative comments, I just delete them because I don't want them. But man, especially in the beginning when people were realizing what I was doing, the comments are just awful. And, you know, they would, some of them would put me in the bed for hours. Like, I can't believe this person said this about me. Or maybe they misinterpreted one of my jokes. Or they just thought I was ugly and just, you know, needed to make sure that I knew. So.
Bless their hearts.
Bless their hearts. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Oh, boy. Well, it sounds like you've come to anyone who could ignore the comment section in a newspaper or especially your own page. You've come to a wise conclusion, I think.
Well, I tell people, when, especially when people are starting out and they're doing this, and I'm like, listen, over time, if you pray about it and give that to the Lord, I was like, the Lord will give you alligator-like skin that is so tough that they just roll right off. And I actually started to use those as writing practice. Of, you know, how can I turn this into a positive? So sometimes if they would say something mean, I would say like, you know, will you please, I can't hear you all the way up on your high horse. Or just depending, you know, depending on what they were. So
Paul lists gifts of the Spirit, and he did not say a good sense of humor in there. In fact, we can't be sure Paul had a sense of humor. Just, I mean, maybe he did, but from the writings we have, do you feel like your humor is a gift from God and part of the work you're here to do?
Okay. Paul. I love Paul. I don't think that Paul would laugh at me. Paul would be like, Jesus, really? And he would be like, yes, really, I love her. And Paul would have to have one of my hats that says, Jesus loves you and I'm trying. But no, truly, the fruits of the Spirit, those are for everyone. So Paul did get it right. Paul, he absolutely got it right. The fruits of the Spirit are for everyone and for everyone to enjoy. I view comedy as more of a gift. So for me, I'm thankful that this is the gift that I've been given. And I hope it doesn't sound like I'm saying I'm the gift. It's a beautiful thing. And I encourage anyone out there listening, if you haven't quite nailed down what your gift is to just pray about it and pray for the Lord to reveal what your gift is. And also, I wish I had better news that, you know, someone would come with a great scroll and wake you in the morning and say, hear ye, I now bestow your gift from above is this. And now you should go and completely nurture this gift and go out into the world. I wish that was the case, but it will be a whisper on your heart Mm-hmm. You know, he won't tell your best friend. He won't tell your mother. So if you go tell your mother, this is my gift, be prepared. Your mother may say, no, it's not. I spent all those years on such and such lessons. So there's no way that this is your gift. So you may have to nurture your gift in silence and then let everybody else figure out, like, wow, this person's really good at this.
That's great advice. I kind of was dying to know what your talent was in the Miss Mississippi pageant.
Oh, well, I did musical theater. I sang Adelaide's Lament from Guys and Dolls.
A poison can develop a cold.
Yes, which was because they had to find something because I couldn't go too high or low. So they had to find something where I could use more of my acting skills as opposed to my singing. They tried to get me to do the xylophone because I did the xylophone 1 year in high school band. Mm-hmm. It took a few years of piano, but I was horrible. But I had to stop everyone and say the only way you can do a xylophone in the Miss Mississippi or Miss America pageant is if you do like a circle of xylophones all around you and your mallets are on fire and you may need to tap dance too. You know, like I was like, I don't have that level. And they're like, okay, we're going to do Adelaide's Lament. And then the funny thing is that actually that art imitated life because my husband, we dated for 4 years before we got married. And it was like, I mean, are we going to do this? Are we like, just, I am living my talent right now, waiting on you to propose. But it all worked out.
I'm glad it worked out.
It all worked out.
I'm wondering, what do you know now about God that you didn't know when you were a young girl? Even though you had decided that I believe and I'm committed, what have you learned in these intervening years?
I feel like starting this journey, I have grown so much closer to Christ through this. I had tried to do comedy so many ways by myself. But as we said earlier, I finally get on stage and COVID shuts it down. Yeah. So when I finally got the courage to start posting online, my prayer every day and every night was, dear Lord, do something so big, it could only be you. And the idea behind that, the reason why I prayed that prayer is I'd heard of people who prayed these limiting prayers. And I had noticed if I said, Lord, get me through this situation, I got through the situation. Lord, help me through this. And he helped me through this. So I thought, you know, he's answered everything I've ever asked. It may not have been the way I thought that it should be, but it's always, he's always answered. He's never failed mm-hmm. me or my family. So I thought, how about instead of just saying, you know, Lord, get me on stage for 10 minutes, what if I just prayed this completely non-limiting prayer and let's see what happens? And I have to tell you, it is the reason why I'm here. It's the reason why we're talking to each other. If the Queen Died in the South really blew up my page, I had posted for 9 months with virtually nothing happening. I had told my husband, I said, if I die before anyone knows I'm funny, will you please put on my headstone, she died trying. And and tell my kids, I died trying because I don't want my kids to ever give up on whatever their dreams are. Well, I just kept posting after the Queen died in the South. And about October, I was really getting tired of just every day coming up with new content. And so I did a repost from the summer because I thought, well, no one's seen it. I didn't have hardly any followers before I did that. So at about 20,000 followers, I reposted a Hey Jesus, It's Me about a friend who was 40, thought she was going through the change and come to find out she was pregnant. And at the end, I say, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, and then follow up with, well, what if I don't want to? And that reel went viral after I had a bigger audience. Well, in my hidden messages in my inbox was a book agent who said, I think you're so funny. Can we talk? I would love to work with you on a book. Well, she wasn't just any book agent. She's one of the best book agents in the business and got me a, you know, mom in Birmingham who was just trying to make people laugh on the internet. She got me interviews with the top four publishers in the world. And then of all things, when I signed with Hachette, the publisher Daisy, who I love, she went to Ole Miss, which is 45 minutes from where I grew up. So I have just learned to never underestimate the way the Lord can weave your journey for his good.
I love that idea of an unlimited or unlimiting prayer because that could apply to so many different things besides just what you're talking about.
Yes, I had heard a story where someone said, imagine you get to heaven and the Lord opens a door and it's full and he says, these are all the gifts I had for you on earth. And all you had to do was ask. So I just mentally try to remind myself, okay, I want that door to be empty. I want the Lord to say, you gave everything I gave you.
Mm,
you know? Like, that's...
That's beautiful. Yeah.
I hope that I'm using the gifts that he gave me just to help make other people laugh and get through their days.
Many thanks to Ellen Scarmetti for speaking with me. This episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team includes Aaliyah Alexander, Heidi Hansen, Ocean Marshall, and James Sturtevant. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen, Lauren Sandberg, and DJ Cromarty. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at In Good Faith Podcast and subscribe to our YouTube channel for extended interviews. Our email, ingoodfaith@byu.edu. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you'll join me again soon, right here in Good Faith. I'm Stephen Cap Perry, host of In Good Faith. We have another podcast in our BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Appleseed. It's a way to take a journey anytime you would like. With stories, nationally known storytellers telling everything from folktales and fairy tales, personal stories, and family tales. It's a great way to get everybody laughing or thinking about some particular topic, and it almost always leads to conversations in the family. If you hit pause after a story and say, "What did you think about that?" and boy, what does that remind you of? That is a fun time to get to share each other's stories, and that's what The Appleseed does. Check out the podcast wherever you get your podcasts.